You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
A public service message from OneOfUs.net. In these trying times, our country is a nation divided. But there is one thing that still brings all of us together. Craft beer. And there's one brewery to do it. The amazing Oscar Blues. Be a patriot and check out all of their delicious flavors like Dale's Pale Ale, Mama's Little Yellow Pills, and Old Chub. And visit their kick-ass breweries in the great American states of Colorado, North Carolina, and Texas. Drink beer. It's what real Americans do. My name is Rob Summers of Deliberations of Doom, and I approve this freaking message.
I know, I am the white guy in horror movies. I'm always like, what, that house is supposedly haunted? Let's go spend the night there. What, this book is drawn in blood? Let's read it out loud and see what happens. But the moment I walked up near this fucking building, I'd be like, no, fuck no. I am not going in there. Fuck that.
What, you were charmed by evil Hogwarts?
Yeah, seriously.
That was like, this is Hogwarts. It's just creepy looking.
They just repainted it.
Yeah.
Put a few holes in the side.
There's a point like a third or maybe half of the way in where like it is firmly established that shit is going cray-cray. The rules of physics are no longer there. Ground disappears and reappears. I can't imagine a single human being who would go, you know what, fuck it, I'm done.
Yeah, right?
Like, it's just too dangerous to walk. It's like, no, I don't care if it's dark. There could be wolves out there. I've got to go out there anyway.
Something as simple as like a bell on a string being dragged into a well. And it's like, just don't follow the bell.
Yeah, don't follow the bell. Stop doing exactly what they
want
you to.
That's exactly what that evil entity would expect me to do.
It's like in these Conjuring films, the devil basically is like just like fucking with people. That's his. He's got this whole playbook of like things to fuck with people because every time they're like, "We're gonna follow that thing." Don't follow that thing. I just want to see a character just once in one of these go, "Oh fuck that," and turn around and go the other way.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but in The Conjuring 1 and 2, I've only seen one. I haven't seen 2. Isn't there a purpose though beyond the fucking with? Like yeah, they're messing with someone, but they're like prepping them.
Yeah, I mean, right. Like, there's a lot of... Okay, so first off, the Conjuring films are kind of Christian-based, like, horror films. They come from a world in which there's, like, the God and Satan and the Bible and
Jesus
all that stuff.
Is real, friends.
And they don't tend to... I mean, it's not like, you know, any film that you see that proudly labels itself as a Christian film, which 9 times out of 10 is a little, like, beating you over the head with that fact. But, nonetheless, it does. And you mentioned The Conjuring 2, which, yes, has to kind of gets into possession to some degree, which is always that thing. They've got to weaken you by scaring you or whatever to possess you. But The Conjuring 2 is where this movie, The Nun, is the official spinoff of, even though to all reports, the character of the evil nun, which I just kept calling Marilyn Manson, was inserted after they were even done with the film. They filmed extra stuff because someone was like, you know what would be scary? Fucking scary nun.
It's like, we designed a costume.
Yeah.
They designed a Halloween costume. Like, dude, people are going to want to dress up as this.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got this cool costume. Let's stick her in the movie. Oh, that worked. Let's make a whole movie about this.
Yeah, none could have not been in The Conjuring 2 at all, and it would have made that movie shorter. So
but
here's why I ask this. It's because, so in this one, The Nun, the prequel, where we ostensibly are setting up, and I put that in quotes, this character, I don't know what the nun was doing at all.
Right. Well, okay, so we'll get to that. First off, I'm Chris.
I'm Marco.
JC. I'm Aaron.
And, like, unfortunately, to really answer that question in a more detailed way, I'd have to give away some spoilers for the last third of the film. But the basic idea of this film, directed by Corin Hardy, who directed a really great film you can see on Netflix called The Hallow. Really, really enjoyed that one. The nun said mentioned in Conjuring 2, where Vera Farmiga's character was like, yeah, this is something that happened a while ago that now it's coming back. This is not good, which was never really resolved in The Conjuring 2. It was more like, oh, this will lead into something later, or in this case, before. So this one goes back to 1952 in Romania, and a nun who kills herself to prevent something from taking her, as presumed Marilyn Manson. And
which
so,
why wouldn't you?
Yeah. And you know, then we go to like outside of there to Rome, where Damien Bashir is Father Burke, and he's kind of like the guy that the Vatican sends out when they've got stuff they don't really know what to do with.
He's their cleaner, basically.
Yeah, he's the wolf. Oh, you mean you were sending the wolf? That's all you had to say.
It's like, there's some weird creepy shit. Yeah, I'll go take care of it.
Yeah, and for some reason that he doesn't even understand, they've sent him to go find a young, not even a nun yet, hasn't even taken her vows yet, Sister Irene, played by Thaisa Farmiga. Yes, sister of Vera Farmiga from the Conjuring films, which I could have sworn was going to be more relevant than it ended up being.
Yeah.
I thought it was
going to be
her the whole movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still not entirely sure it's not, but the movie is very, very like sort of, well, I don't know.
It's
anyway,
inconclusive.
Yeah. It's inconclusive. But, so they're like, it looks like she has visions that have been coming to her. Maybe that's connected in some way. Even the movie never really answers what the deal is. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff where like, they're like, somebody even one of the other characters like recognizes her, and she's like, no, you don't know me. I've never been here before. And there's like this insinuation, like she's been there, but just doesn't remember it.
Maybe
it comes to nothing.
Maybe this is all going to be explained in Conjuring 3 or Nun 2 or
yeah,
whatever. There's a lot of things in here that feel like, I mean, we talked about this earlier, and I think we mentioned this when we were reviewing one of the Annabelle films, all of the films in this sort of Conjuring series. You know,
the Conjuring verse.
The Conjuring verse. It's too, you know, I'd rather it be something else than universe, but I don't want a whole universe of these damn things.
But it okay. is. They're all tied together.
Can we call it something smaller, like a galaxy?
The next one's going to be the stick man guy from.
Exactly. I mean, you know, right. Well, right. If we shorten it to galaxy, then I'll just shorten it further to conjugal, and that'll never work. So, anyway, the thing about this film is that, like all of the Conjuring films, it is an exercise in jump scares. Now, if you like that sort of thing, you're going to get exactly what you think you're getting here. If you like the other Conjuring films, yeah, you're going to like this too, I think. But it doesn't do much with what could have been an interesting premise. And every time you have like an exposition dump or some kind of references to the past, it always feels half-assed and thrown in. Like, at some point they thought, oh, shit, we actually have to tell a story in between all of these set pieces.
Yeah, I mean, and there's an awful lot of set pieces and very little time to actually tell a story. Said story, which I wasn't finished with yet, Marco, thank you very much, is they're set out
there's
to the...
Story? Spoilers, there are jump scares.
Out to the creepy-ass evil Hogwarts, and they're having trouble even finding anyone there. Brought out there with the help of a young French Canadian, as he keeps insisting, Frenchie, played by Jonas Bloquet, who is like, yeah, no one even wants to talk about this place out there. Everybody thinks the place is like really super creepy, which it self-evidently is. Anyway, so like, well, don't worry, come back for us in a couple days. We're going to spend the night out here and try and get to the bottom of what's happening. And it takes all of 10 seconds, basically, before I would be like, in their case, like, yep, place is fucked. Go back, call the Crusaders, take care of this shit. This needs an army of church guys, not a dude and a teenage chick.
Oh, and there are Crusaders in this movie, because like, oh shit, we have to explain something. Flashback time.
Well, yeah, because
a flashback to what would have been a more fun movie.
Exactly. Oh, that will probably be The Nun 2. Will be just that.
Because that's before she was the nun.
Yeah. I'm okay with that. I want to see that movie.
Well, because that's what they did with Annabelle. They did one that's in the past, and they're like, oh, now we'll do one even further in the past and show the origin. So Nun 2 will be Nun 2 origin. but yeah, it's like, this is a series of like, you said, it's these type of movies, going back to Insidious, is basically he wants to put you on the most expensive haunted house ride you've ever been on. But you don't go into a haunted house ride, like, you know, in a little train car type thing, expecting to genuinely be scared. You expect to be startled and then to laugh. And this is what these movies do. And honestly, I think they do them better than anyone else does, if that's what you're looking for. This one I thought was interesting because it's basically a universal horror movie on fucking crystal meth. It's like has these great atmospheric sets and lots of cool little creepy set pieces, but they're just creepy. They're never actually outright scary except for, once again, the whole like, oh, I got startled for a second.
So you kind of hit the nail on the head. This movie is an exercise in that question on a terrible crew can take a great script and just make a trash film, but a great crew and a great talent can take a terrible script, and no matter what they do, it's still going to be okay at best.
Yeah.
That was this. The actors all put in their A game and they do a decent job. The effects are good. They shoot the shit out of this movie. It is gorgeous.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
The set design is great. But, oh my God, is it one of the worst scripts I've ever seen. No character has any real anything about them. There's this whole bit that they keep touching on with Tessa Farmiga not having given her final vows that has no actual bearing on her character in what should be a couple of really powerful scenes, but because we don't know anything about her, it means nothing.
Ultimately, it doesn't really play into
motivation for anything to happen. Yeah. It's just like,
it should be an important third act element, and they act as if it is, and then it really is totally irrelevant.
And it's potentially the only big linking connection between this film and Conjuring 2. And okay, it's not a spoiler to say that Tessa Farmiga is the sister of Vera Farmiga
in real life.
We are in real life, and we are expecting to make some connection between that obvious familial resemblance.
And there is a really connection shown in the film between another character in the film and a scene that we saw that I totally forgot about in the first Conjuring movie, where it's like, oh, okay, so now they're starting to link the thread together. But there's a sense with this one that they're overconfident with the sense of this. We're the only horror shared universe out there that's worked so far.
Yeah.
And that this film gets downright bombastic about it and starts setting up almost too many threads that aren't answered at all, that are just things that are alluded to, and then you're like, okay, well, that went absolutely nowhere within this film itself.
They even do things that don't make sense. Like, she has these visions, and at one point, she agrees that those visions are her proof that there is God, or that God is real. You never really see why she makes that connection, and then she, all it really does is lead up to one moment in the third act, which is way after she realizes after, you know, that those visions are proof of God, and it's like, well, that should have been your proof of God.
Right.
That would have been, it would have made more sense. Why did you realize that before?
Like, I mean, the glowing E.T. finger wasn't enough?
I think proof of God is basically that Frenchie eventually comes back into the movie and inserts some much-needed comic relief into the third act.
His name is Frenchie, for God's sake. Like, that's the level this script is working at. Yeah. There's a French character. Let's call him Frenchie. That's what you expect.
Frenchie is the only character in the entire movie who has actual agency at any point makes a decision.
Yeah, that's very true.
Everyone else is either...
They're trapped in the little car on the ride.
Or at one point, the bad guy leads them to the secret, like on purpose, I guess?
Yeah.
And I wasn't really sure, like, just this...
Well, I got that, because that whole thing was kind of like his ultimate goal, which once again, I don't want to, that's third act spoilers, but his ultimate goal depended on him getting a character to that spot to complete said goal. And it was like, okay, so both the solution to fix the problem and the guy's ultimate goal are right at the exact same spot, basically.
You know what it is? I just figured it out right now. And this is both an insult and a compliment. Jason Blum is the new Roger Corman. Because it really feels like they had an extra 20 pages of script fleshing out these characters and a few of these scenes. And, oh, that's why this means something. And, oh, that's why this kid has a snake coming out of his mouth. And they were just like, fuck it, man. We got to move. Cut this. And that's what it feels like.
We need to cut, you know, $200,000 off the script. All right, here's 20 pages. Gone. Yeah. Done. You know, just rip. There's $100,000 every time I rip out a few pages.
And I will say, compared to other Blumhouse films, though, this is a lot higher budgeted and shows it than your average Blumhouse film.
Well,
usually, they're $3 million for most Blumhouse. The Conjuring films were not. Those were higher.
Yeah.
But most of the Blumhouse releases are right around $3 to $5 million. This was $22 million, which meant somebody was like, this whole universe thing is working. We need to keep pumping money into it. But once again, it still feels overconfident. Like, there's a point where a nun is giving the historical speech, and she's terrible. It's the only truly terrible performance in the movie, where I was like, oh my God, this is awful. And it doesn't help the dialogues were so bad, but telling the whole story, and it really does have, like, it's that moment in the movie where I just pulled so far away from it, and I was like, guys, there had to have been a better way to do this.
It's one of those things where, you know, you can create a certain amount of horror without having to explain anything. thing, or explaining it as little as possible, letting that ambiguity, that mystery carry you forward. But this film, you're right, in that it has the confidence that it assumes that you're going to follow all of these threads, but it also has that moment where it's like, well, we kind of have to tell them what's happening, you know, because we don't want to lose the audience.
It just
here.
Felt like there would have been a better way to do it than
so many better ways
than a straight up information dump like that. I mean, there's even a sequence here where they find a bunch of creepy old books in a grave that the priest starts looking through, like boys from Supernatural, and you're like, well, that's where you should have gotten the thing from. You just go into, you don't even need to have a character saying it. Yeah. You just show him starting to read it, and then show us what the thing is.
To my theory that there was more to it, they kind of do that. Like, you can see, oh, there's a picture of a nun as he's skimming through that book, and
right.
Oh, there's the snake thing as he's skimming through the book, but they don't really do anything with it. It's like there was another 2 minutes.
And to be clear, the nun's not actually, like, because I wondered in the first one, so is the nun like a dead nun that's, like, now evil for some reason? And it's like, the movie explains rather quickly. No, it's just, it is a really fucking asshole demon that basically assumes a form that would be appropriate for the situation, in which case it's in an abbey. Yeah. So,
well, but it's like, this way no one will suspect I'm here. It's like, but you're a creepy fucking nun. Yeah. Everybody knows you're wrong.
Yeah, you don't turn around. Yeah, you don't. You may put some makeup on or something.
Yeah, something. It's not really committing to the disguise very much.
I will say, though, that the one thing I'm glad this filmic universe has done, it's given us proof that handheld camera really does work well in a horror film. Like, 7 or 8 times in this movie, it's not shaky cam, it's just, oh yeah, someone's just holding the camera and moving, and they'll do a pan across, and then, oh my god, there's this thing. And
yeah.
They do several reveals like that, and it does such a great job of getting you into the moment and making you feel like it's a real location.
I mean, it's great when they do it. They get those 360-degree... Because, I mean, if you've built these kind of beautiful sets, you want to show them off, too. Mm. And you can rotate the camera in 360 degrees and get all of that production value in the lens. The problem is, they always end up the same. It's like you spin around, you see nothing, you spin around, you see nothing. And then they go, oh, well, I guess there's nothing here. They spin around, and boom, there it is.
Yeah,
and point. They do that over and over and over again to where it's like, you did this perfectly every time.
Oh, I see why.
Why this do you have to do it over and over?
This was filmed at Corbin Castle, which is often thought of as, like, the most haunted place in the world in real life. So you're kind of like, okay, it is. If you ever go look up pictures of it, it's fucking creepy.
It is creepy. I mean, it's a great location, a great exterior.
It actually ties into the story of Vlad Tepes.
There you go.
And did anyone else notice the second day they were there lasted about 45 minutes?
Yeah.
It was pretty quick.
They missed all the points where nothing happened that day, and they were just, like, checking their Twitter.
1952 Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, technically the government had invented the internet at that point, so I'm just saying it's possible.
This is, you know, now that we have this, and you're right, that it is a universe. They are finding ways to connect these together. It's been successful. That's why they're willing to put some money into it. And I give them credit for that. At least, like, Warner's between this and it. You know, they're one of the few studios, mainstream sort of big Hollywood studios, that have thought, you know what? We can actually, on a modest budget, do horror. It doesn't have to be just this sort of indie ghetto kind of thing. It's like big studios can actually put together horror films that have good directors, great casts, really great visuals. However, I would like them to kind of push themselves a little bit more. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. This is not a bad movie. It's, you know, I kind of think of it like the Ramones or AC/DC. All of those albums sound the same, but they're pretty good.
I call movies like this tourist horror.
Sure.
Like, this is not the movies that hardcore horror fans flock to. These are the movies where people are like, oh yeah, I like a horror movie every once in a while. I want someone to actually scare me. But that is elevating those type of movies much more than they usually are in terms of budget and the amount of attention to detail. I mean, the guy has a way of doing things. And this studio, and they certainly have gotten to the point they're pretty damn adept at it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. Yeah, there's a lot of horror movies out there that were made for a tenth of this budget that are a billion times better than this. But if you want something that's just, like I said, you're going in for a big, dumb, but non-stop things happening ride, this movie.
Yeah, I think things like this are kind of cyclical. I think, like, we had the mid to late 90s where we were getting Drek, like Valentine's Day and Urban Legends and stuff like that, and I think we're
well past that. And so these movies, like the reaction of the Halloween trip, like this movie Halloween are going to make boatloads of money. I think, you know, for every four or five of those movies, if we get one Hereditary, then I think that's kind of worth it.
Yeah. No, I mean, and that's only the movie that happens to be not just art horror, but lucky enough that we actually get a wide theatrical release for this year. It's going to be Suspiria.
Hereditary is the same makers as The Witch, so like The Witch is probably a better example. But for every five or ten of these movies, we get The Witch, Hereditary.
And like I said, three to four of those five movies are entertaining anyway. Yeah. We had Happy Death Day from the same studio, which is like, it's no horror masterpiece, but goddamn was it fun to watch.
I actually think if you just go over to Jason Blum's house, he'll just turn off all the lights and charge you $10 to jump out and scream in your ear every 2 minutes.
Well, why don't you keep going to your final thoughts?
Well, as I was saying earlier, this reminds me of like bands that all kind of sound the same. They put out the same sounding album all the time, but you like that album. You enjoy it. So if you liked those other albums, you're probably going to like this too. So same thing with The Conjuring. It's not going to give you anything you weren't expecting. And for a lot of you, that's fine. That's exactly what you want out of this movie, and it gives it to you. I wish that with this budget and with this kind of cast and this kind of recognition, they would take a few more risks. But you don't make a lot of money taking risks very often. So if this ends up just being a series that becomes a gateway to a lot of people to other types of horror, that's not a bad thing. I give this 6.5, 10 Hail Marys.
Oh, what about you, JC?
I do like the music analogy. I do miss the old Kanye. it's a solid entry into the Conjuring verse. It's a fifth movie, the sixth movie.
The fifth, I think. Because Conjuring 2, Annabelle 2, and then this.
Have they made enough to fit the Star Trek rule? It's like the second one, that's the even numbers with the good ones?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I forget.
But this, out of five movies, this is probably square in the middle, which I think is about right.
Yeah.
I think in a lot of ways the effort was there to make a really good movie. You mentioned the comedic aspect. I did appreciate a couple of elements where it was, you know, dead things coming back to life. The way in which those were executed, I felt like somebody really appreciated the Evil Dead.
I kept thinking that too. I was like, there are points you're like, oh yeah, this is Evil Dead influenced. Yeah. And it would have been nice if there was more of that.
More of that, yeah. Because that would have been cool. And I certainly wasn't expecting that. Was glad to see it. So, you know, I think in that essence, it's not a great movie, but a more than capable one. All the performances are good. A few too many cheap jump scares, but I mean that's sort of the norm, I guess. I would give it 7 out of 10 upside down crosses.
Aaron,
you know, JC, you compared this to a couple of movies. One of them is the new Halloween, and I have to bring up the fact that like what makes that stand apart to me is that you have people wanting to make a movie desperately and feeling passionate about it, creating a story that they feel passionate about, and then going from there. Whereas this, like, I feel like the director, the DP, the actors, the effects, the set designers, everyone brought their A game, but it was for such a half-baked, lazy script that just
everyone earned their paycheck.
Nothing land. So, like, we have a lot of great ideas. You can see the filmmakers going, let's throw in some outlandish humor. You can see them going, we're talking about fucking the devil and demons and angels and God. And let's be honest, Christianity is really kind of badass with its stories. If you go, yeah, all this stuff is actually real. Like, there's some cool stuff there. And I really enjoy movies about the Christian faith, even though I myself am in no way a Christian. I always have. So like, there's a lot here for me to like, but no character ever makes a decision or has any kind of agency in the entire film. There's no rules, so they just kind of do whatever. Like, this movie could have been special, and instead it's, I'm going to forget about it in 6 months, and then like, this is the kind of movie I feel like you should watch on Netflix versus the thing you should pay $13 to go see. I'm going to say, oh, you already get the crosses.
You can say right side up crust.
I'm going to say 4 out of 10 frozen nuns.
Fair enough. You know, like I said, this is, I agree with everything everybody's saying. I think you really nail it with saying, like, it's everybody's bringing their A game except maybe the writer, who had a few good ideas. But ultimately, the thing is just, one of the problems is, like you said, there are no rules. It's just like, okay, so anything could happen. It's hard to have a sense of urgency when you don't even know what they're trying to do. You know, you're like, what is the goal here exactly? How are you going to fix the situation? Like, what is this demon thing capable of? What is it able to do? But there's more than enough, like, genuinely cool, scary imagery where I'm like, it's not terrifying or anything, but it's creepy in that, ooh, cool sort of way. Like, for guys who, like, just like old gothic, freaky-looking stuff, you're like, wow, I've seen a lot of stuff on DeviantArt that looks like every scene in this movie, is what I'm saying. I enjoyed it because this movie never stops. Right from the beginning, it's just like, yep, bang, 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 one thing after another. You can accuse this movie of a lot of things, but being boring is not one of them. I mean, if you have a taste for this type of imagery, yeah, it's just a big jump scare ride, but they do jump scares better than almost anybody else does out there. What it is, sure, it'd be nice. And I suspect what will eventually happen if this keeps on going, this franchise, is that sooner or later they'll start having reduced appreciation, and they'll go, okay, we need to keep doing what we're doing, except this time get an actual really good screenplay writer in here. This is not like they hire bad actors, or they hire the best people in the industry for effects stuff, and like great cinematographers and all that, and they've got a great way of shooting these things that is just fun. Like, there's a lot of shots in here where you know exactly what's about to happen, but it's fun watching it happen.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of that sort of, like, there's someone standing behind them and the camera follows them as they turn around and literally they disappear with the tip of a character's nose blocking them for an eighth of a second in a very seamless little shot. And you're like, that was cool. I knew that was going to happen, but I liked watching it. There's a lot of that going on here. And I say, ultimately, I did enjoy this, but there's always that feeling, wow, this could have been a really good movie. It just, you just couldn't be bothered. I think I will revisit this one, but yeah, probably just on Netflix. One of those, like, oh, it's a stormy night. I want to watch something that looks all creepy that's not actually going to freak me out. And that's probably, it's a stormy night now. Oh, we didn't know that when we went into the movie. But yeah, the Nun is not going to make hardcore horror fans happy, but it's going to make people who like horror, but it's not like the end all for their being pretty happy, I suspect. I'm going to give this 6.5 out of 10, grave bells. Because I can't believe nobody took that before me. It's like, Jesus. I remember that used to creep me out when I first heard that was about a real thing. With the
Victorian grave bells.
Yeah.
Whereas, that was the thing. They made it more sound medieval, but my understanding is it was originally a Victorian.
Yeah, I thought it was too.
But it was like, no, plague victims. I'm like, no, I don't think that's right. But you know what? I don't think these guys are doing any hardcore historical research.
Yeah, it just didn't strike me. It was strongly based on historical fact.
How about the timelines of what they explain do not add up whatsoever.
Yeah.
In any way. As soon as this movie ended, I was like, wait a minute.
I mean, it's kind of their own fault.
You said this all came from here. Let me Google when that shit happened. Because this does not make any sense.
It's kind of their own fault for playing that, oh, this is based on real events. Oh, bullshit. You know, maybe there was like a seed of reality in this.
I mean, has there ever been any horror movie ever that said based on real events that you went, really?
Yeah.
It's not even that. Let's be honest. I agree with what you said, Chris. Anytime you see based on true events, it's like, oh, okay, that's cute.
It's adorable.
That's like saying Wes Craven's new nightmare is based on fact because Wes Craven is a real dude.
And I will do this in a way that does not give away spoilers. They tie directly everything that happens to a particular event that occurred, and that event that occurred does not match up with what we're seeing in the movie whatsoever.
No. Yeah.
Like, at all. It makes no sense.
Timeline-wise, you're like, wait, how could that possibly?
Yeah.
How is that person not aged? How is that person not related to that other person?
Yeah, I've got
to
watch all day.
If they hadn't said anything, I would have been like, oh, okay, whatever. But when they call it out, I was like, wait. No, none of this makes any sense whatsoever.
How was that person normal for like 20-odd years, and then suddenly shit went weird? Yeah.
I suspect that if I saw this again, I would find yet more things that made no sense whatsoever. But you know what?
Probably.
Whatever. I'll pay my $5 and get back on the ride again.
There you go.